Thank you, David. Did any of you wonder why I carried this little box in with me? This is your toolbox. If you don't know what's in your toolbox, how can you go to an interoperability event? That's what I wanted to talk about today. I think Glenn Nash spoke very clearly this morning about what you bring to the event is what you're going to use at that event. You're not going to bring in a new tool and try to figure out how to use it. What you're going to have to do is know what is in your toolbox before there's an emergency. The first thing I have in my toolbox is a light. Hope it'll stay up there. But let's first of all define interoperability. SAFECOM says interoperability is the ability of public safety agencies to communicate with one another via radio communication systems, yada, 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 yada. What that really means is to be able to communicate, exchange voice or data with one another real time when authorized in an event, all the time. To be able to communicate. Just like Mr. Nash spoke earlier, if I say, cover me, and you start putting bullets in the air, we didn't communicate very well. During the sniper incident, when an officer from the FBI gave out a 10 code that said he'd ran out of gas, and 30 police officers responded with lights and siren because they thought he was in trouble, didn't communicate very well. Plain voice communications in any emergency. Speaking of communications, when I was in the eighth grade, I was given a poem. The whole class was given a poem to memorize. And that's why the light's up here. Notice who the author's name is. Has nothing to do with me. Okay? But I took I took very clear note of that in the eighth grade and tried to get some extra credit for saying, my last name is the same as his middle name. Does that count? No. But what two people did in April of 75 were able to communicate with just a light bulb. They did it perfectly. They passed their communications test. They didn't have a multi-million dollar command vehicle or an ACU-1000 or a satellite. They had a flashlight, basically. And they changed the whole course of our country. Think about it. The Department of Homeland Security says there are six levels of interoperability. Level one, physically exchange radios. When you show up, I give you one of my radios, we can communicate. Very simple, very easy to communicate. Level two, TalkAround provides TalkAround or a directed net. TalkAround provides interoperability where multiple radio users talk radio to radio on the same transmit and receive frequency. Level three, mutual aid. Have channels in your radio that can have interoperability with other agencies around you. This is a little bit hard to read, a lot of text in there, but level four is a gateway or a console switch. A gateway is a generic term for multiple things like an ACU-1000, a Motorola device similar to an ACU-1000, a ICRI or a FutureCom or other gateway devices. FutureCom's not really a gateway, but there are interoperability tools out there to marry disparate systems together. Level five, system-specific roaming. Additional interoperable capabilities for first responder incident management can be provided by leveraging existing systems using mutual aid talk groups. And level six is a standard-based shared systems. George Santayana, a famous philosopher, who I'd never heard of before, looked this thing up. I'd heard of the words, but never heard of him, said, "Those who cannot remember the past are doomed to repeat it." Examples of the past. How many of you were here January 13th, 1982 in the Washington, D.C. area? Remember what famous thing happened that day? That was our wake-up call. That was the wake-up call in the National Capital Region that we needed interoperability. There was a major snowstorm, cold weather, very, very cold. The Potomac was frozen. It was an ugly day. But typical of all government employees, we all came to work. I was in a carpool, drove to work just like everybody else did. Air Florida Flight 90 had just taken off from Washington Airport, Washington, D.C. Airport at that time, and immediately crashed into the 14th Street Bridge and into the Potomac River. It hit the bridge, struck 7 vehicles, killed 4 motorists, injured 4 other motorists. The aircraft shattered the surface ice, broke into several large pieces, and quickly sank. Traffic had already stopped in the traffic jam due to the storm. Between the effects of the storm, the rescue efforts around the 14th Street Bridge, the 12-lane complex ceased to function and closed to traffic. The George Washington Parkway closed. How many of you remember that within a half hour after that, there was a metro train fire? At that time, we only had 3 rails. We had the orange, the blue, and the red. At 4:30, WMATA metro train backed up over a crossover switch between the orange and the blue, in a tunnel. The cars derailed. The train operator didn't know he had derailed, and he continued to back up for 171 feet until the last car ran into a cement pillar and immediately came to an abrupt stop, burst into flames. There were 3 people killed, 25 injuries, and we immediately shut down the blue and the orange lines of the metro train. The blue and the orange lines connected, I'm sorry, the blue line connected National Airport in Arlington to Addison Road Station in Maryland. The orange line, Ballston Station in Arlington, to New Carrollton Station in Maryland. The only line open or that was not affected was the red line. So in a 1-hour period, the D.C. area lost the use of its, at that time, its busiest airport, its busiest expressway, the busiest subway line, the by far widest, busiest bridge from D.C. to Virginia, and one rapid rail transit line from D.C. to Virginia closed. That was our wake-up call. Mr. Steve Souter, who is now the Director of Public Safety Communications for Fairfax County, in a presentation to the Federal Communications Commission on November 16, 2001, made the following comments. The crash of Flight 90 created a tremendous outpouring of public safety response, and unfortunately, it didn't go very well. There was very good intentions. Everybody was there, but nobody could talk to anybody. We had every imaginable frequency, every imaginable brand and type of radio, and every imaginable kind of agency converging on a snowy riverbank, and nobody could talk. Go ahead 20 years, September 11th, 2001. Another horrific event, but the times have totally changed. Notice in the picture, you see an Annandale volunteer fire or medic unit, Fairfax County unit. The one to the right of it's an Arlington County unit. All of the agencies, the public safety first responder agencies, that responded to the Pentagon were able to communicate. There was some communications issues, but they were nowhere near like they were in 1982. Because every public safety agency had a radio. And in that radio is every other public safety agency in the region. In my radio that I hold in front of you today, I can talk to DC Fire, DC Police, Arlington Fire, Alexandria Fire, Airport Authority, Fairfax, Loudoun, Prince William County, Fauquier, Charles County, Montgomery County, Howard County. I can go on and on. There are 14 different systems in this radio. There are 500 different talk groups in this radio. Managing that is a lot of fun, and that's what I do, is manage the code plugs that are in the radio so that the users can talk to whom they need to talk to when the emergency happens. Some of that is on a day-to-day basis. Some of that is only in a large emergency. Here's a picture of the Washington, D.C. area, and we have, like I was just alluding to, radios in every first responder's vehicle that can communicate with everyone else in the area, except for PG County. And they're coming online very quickly. Within a year, we hope to have them in the 800 megahertz band with compatible radios that we can all communicate with. But in this area, people can respond. Now, there were some lessons learned in communications from 9/11. We sent in our fire command pod within 30 minutes of the incident. The police command vehicle came to the 911 center where we checked it all out, made sure everything was perfect, sent it off to the Pentagon. I got a call a few minutes later, and they said, Jim, we have just turned the police vehicle over to Montgomery County Fire Department to be used as their command vehicle. And none of the radios are programmed with Montgomery County Fire. I immediately drove to the Pentagon and spent the next few hours reprogramming radios to get them all compatible. The lesson I learned from that is every major command vehicle now, no matter what color it is, no matter who owns it, has everybody's talk groups and frequencies in it. That's a huge logistics problem, because when one agency changes one talk group, we've got to make sure we capture that. So we have to coordinate that effort, and we do that through the Council of Governments so that we don't constantly reprogram radios. But when the first responder shows up, they have that ability in their radios. Another thing that I did last year, last May, and I'm going to do again this May 12th, is I held a communications vehicle rally. I invited every state, local, federal agency in the metropolitan area to come to Fairfax County and demonstrate what communications or interoperability vehicles they had. We had a turnout from over 40 federal, state, and local agencies from as far away as Norfolk, Virginia, and as far away as the state of Delaware that came down to look at and to demonstrate their interoperability tools. And the three lessons we learned from that: a lot of people had a lot of toys. A lot of people didn't know how to operate their toys. And a lot of people didn't know that their next door neighbor had a toy just like theirs. Now we do. If you need a 110-foot self-supporting aerial or tower, do you know where to get one? There's one about 5 miles down the road on a trailer waiting to be deployed. Now they know that it's available. So an on-scene commander, an incident commander, knows that those things are available in the National Capital Region. One of the problems with grant money is you go out and buy things with your grant money, but you don't know where in the grant money does it say you have to tell all your neighbors you got this thing. So if your neighbors don't know you got it, they can't help you, or they can't come to the scene and interoperate with you. That's one of the things that I'm doing now. And you're all invited, May 12th, to Fairfax County's police driver training facility, where we're going to have another event. Chief Mike Newhart is the chief of our fire department. Before the House Government Reform Subcommittee on Technology, just last year, he talked about interoperability, just like we're talking about interoperability today. But what he said is very closely to what Mr. Nash said earlier. Technology is only about 10% of this thing. We can give you all the toys in the world. But what you have to have is a common incident management techniques, common terminology, common policy and procedures, standardized training, and compatible equipment. Could you imagine going to an incident with your fire truck and find out your hose could not go onto their fire hydrant? That used to be the case about 100 years ago, that they weren't standardized. They are today. At least I hope they are. They're not. He's shaking his head. They're not standardized. As of today, you could take a fire truck from Virginia, drive it to California, and the fitting wouldn't fit on the fire hose. That's imaginable, unimaginable. But what I wanted to say is the toy or the tool is not what makes the game. It's training, training, training on how you use that tool and how you play interoperability that one last thing. My last tool in my toolbox. Can you all see that? Can you tell me what it is? Did you know that this is a left-handed metric crescent wrench? You're all going, what is Jim talking about? Well, if you look on the inscription, it says 1 1/8 to 2.9 millimeters. Actually, it must be 29 millimeters. 29 millimeters. I didn't know they came in, you know, that comes in millimeters? Okay. Didn't know that. Well, if I needed to go 2.5 inches, I can't do it with this tool because it says millimeters. And how do I know it's left-handed? When I hold it this way and turn my thumb toward me, the jaws close. I have another one that I didn't bring with me today. When I do the exact same thing, the jaws open. Isn't that amazing that a simple thing like this can be different in different jurisdictions? People could have the same tool. They run up to grab it. They know exactly what it is, and it works differently. Okay? Standardization. But if I can get any point across to you, we have all the toys we need. We just need to practice using them and practice and practice and practice using them together. Thank you very much. My life.